Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Prices keep climbing and American companies just keep passing the costs on to people. Plus, Russian hackers behind the SolarWinds attack are at it again and at it hard. And green investing was the darling for years. Now people have to sit back and watch polluters rally.
This really big rally that we've seen in the fossil fuel producers this year has put a lot of people in a bind.
It's Monday, October 25th. I'm Peter Granitz with the Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Microsoft says the hackers behind the SolarWinds data breach are ramping up their attacks. Tom Burt, a Microsoft security executive, says the Russian-linked hackers have attempted more than 20,000 attacks at 600 companies since July alone. He says that's more than the total number of government-linked attempted hacks in the last 3 years. A U.S. government official briefed on Microsoft's findings said the latest intrusion attempts appear to be largely routine hacking from Russia. Moscow has denied involvement. Turkey's lira sank to a record low after President Recep Tayyip Erdogan threatened to boot 10 Western ambassadors. They had called for the release of a jailed Turkish philanthropist who the government in Ankara says has ties to a failed coup. Osman Kavala has been detained since 2017, and the European Court of Human Rights ruled in 2019 that he should be released. Among the ambassadors deemed persona non grata are top diplomats from the U.S., Canada, and Germany. The Sudanese prime minister has been detained following an apparent military coup, according to the Sudanese Information Ministry. Soldiers and members of a paramilitary group are patrolling Khartoum, and the country's internet appears to be shut down. Government officials were pressured to dissolve the government, but upon refusing, the prime minister was taken to an unknown location. Representatives for Sudan's military could not immediately be reached for comment. The EU foreign policy chief has expressed his utmost concern, and an American envoy said the U.S. was deeply alarmed. Both have called for the democratic transition process to resume. And negotiations between the Italian government and UniCredit over the sale of nationalized bank Monte dei Paschi have collapsed. Rome had wanted UniCredit to buy the troubled bank in a bid to revive the Italian financial sector. A deal became more urgent after a stress test earlier this year revealed Monte dei Paschi's capital would be wiped out in a severe economic downturn, and the ECB said European banks had not yet felt the brunt of the pandemic. The government took control of the bank in 2017 and has agreed to reprivatize it by April 2022. Things just keep getting more expensive, and big American companies are planning to keep raising prices on you. Everything from diapers to data plans to burritos is expected to get more expensive in the coming months. To learn why, we have with us markets reporter Joe Wallace. Welcome back.
Hi, Peter.
Joe, what have some of these companies said about rising operating costs?
So companies including Procter & Gamble and Verizon and Nestle all say that to offset fast-growing costs, which, as we know, are being driven up by a supply chain crisis around the world, they plan to raise prices for their consumers. So we can expect to see products such as Gillette razors and coffee from Nestle and burritos at Chipotle get more expensive in the coming months. And the companies are really betting on the fact that consumers, having accumulated savings during the pandemic and also benefiting from higher wages, will have enough cash to pay these higher prices. So, for example, P&G last week said it was going to raise prices for a third time, and that's going to go into effect in the next few months. And it told investors to expect its profits to actually accelerate as the year progresses. So it really thinks consumers are going to be able to pay these prices.
Can people afford this, or at some point, do they just have to start looking for cheaper alternatives?
So this is the big question. Chipotle, Mexican Grill, said that high prices haven't turned people off. its burritos. Nestle, meanwhile, raised its four-year guidance, and it says that consumers are continuing to drink more and better coffee, which bolsters its profits. But some analysts have questioned whether Nestle's confidence in its more expensive coffee is overblown, and others wonder if P&G's market share will erode or even reverse if consumers pull back as those price increases kick in. And, you know, there's some history. Poorly timed price rises can be something of a disaster. So Clorox, for example, raised prices for its Glad trash bags in 2019. Retailers pushed back, stocked up rival offerings, and it dented the company's sales and gave an advantage to the company's chief rival. So no one will want to follow in Clorox's footsteps this year.
Joe, we know that the Federal Reserve is likely to start winding down its stimulus program sometime soon. Now that inflation is proving more acute than the Fed had originally said, might these costs affect its decision?
I think it already has done. As you say, the Fed is expected to start winding down its $120 billion a month bond purchase program next month. That's a faster timeline than was expected. Earlier this year, the Fed left investors with the impression that it would reduce bond purchases around next January. We can see a bit of a shift in the Fed's thinking in public remarks. For much of the year, Chairman Jerome Powell and senior officials have downplayed worries about the surge in prices. They've said that this burst of inflation will fade naturally as supply chain kinks iron out. But recent public remarks do show they hold that view with less conviction now than they did previously.
That is markets reporter Joe Wallace. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Peter.
Coming up, investors focusing on clean energy stocks are missing out on the rally in fossil fuel companies. The cost of investing with your conscience.
Your Money Briefing will explore what you need to know to become a homeowner and how to sustain your home by learning ways to manage the costs from unexpected expenses.
You're basically always in a state of checking. You're always keeping your eye open for anything that could be going wrong with your house. Your house is a complicated machine. It has a lot of systems and components in it, and those systems and components are getting older. They're wearing out.
You can get early access to our series, Buying a Home and Keeping It, on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
For years, investing in low-carbon energy stocks was seen as a sound, long-term investment. Good for the earth, good for your retirement, but for the people who opted to keep their money out of carbon-emitting energy companies, they have missed out on quite the rally. Those holdings are up more than 20% in the last month alone. Amrith Ramkumar has the story, and he joins us now. Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you? Thanks so much for having me.
Good. We're glad you're here. Paint us a picture of the energy investing landscape up until this point. Just how good were, you know, so-called green stocks over the past few years?
Sure. In the last few years, green energy has been one of the hottest investment trends. So we've seen EV companies like Tesla, startups trying to recharge your electric car. All of these stocks have kind of gone through the roof, and investors were really rewarded for piling into those companies, even at high valuations, and avoiding companies like Exxon, Chevron, large fossil fuel producers. In 8 of 9 years through 2020, the S&P 500 energy sector, which heavily weights those traditional big fossil fuel producers you think about, it lagged behind the S&P 500. It was a case where you could have your cake and eat it too. You could avoid the energy sector and say, I'm a very climate conscious investor, I'm very ESG focused, and we know ESG has become the hot topic on Wall Street as people line up just trillions of dollars in total to transition away from fossil fuels. So now this really big rally, like you said, that we've seen in the fossil fuel producers this year has put a lot of people in a bind, and a lot of people are kind of trying to catch up because energy stocks haven't been the market's best performing sector in a really long time.
For those people who don't know, tell us what ESG investing is.
Yeah, ESG factors are environmental, social, and governance factors, and that takes a lot of different forms, but basically
companies with better ESG scores as defined by some third parties are often put into certain buckets and funds that track the market, and investors have just plowed billions and billions of dollars into those funds in recent years. And it's ESG investing is more art than science in a lot of cases. So you can still have like companies like Exxon and Chevron and others that are deemed to be doing more to fight climate change down the road or whatever the case might be. They can still be in your ESG fund. So there's a lot of greenwashing that goes on to a lot of skeptical analysts where investment firms will try to make it seem like they're more ESG or environmentally conscious, and then they might have some of these companies in their funds.
Do we know what the breakdown is between traditional fossil fuel companies and green companies?
Yeah, the S&P 500 energy sector is really heavily weighted toward like oil and gas producers, oil field services companies, the companies that move oil and gas and fuel around the world. So it is more fossil fuel heavy. And a lot of the companies in the green energy sector and renewables and all of that, they aren't really in that. They aren't large enough and don't have like the earnings proven out yet to be considered for the sector. And zooming way out, the reason we've seen oil and natural gas prices in general spike and push up costs for consumers and businesses heading into winter, one of the reasons is because of Wall Street's ESG obsession and ESG focus, which a lot of people say have starved regular fossil fuel producers of capital and really pressured them not to spend on new supplies. And so a lot of the cushion in the energy system has been depleted. And that's why people say, in part, we're seeing these huge price run-ups and the shares of these companies run up. But they, in some cases, might not even be able to take huge advantage if they're not able to spend on new supplies.
You talked with some money managers who've actually encouraged their clients to get into the oil and gas sector right now, despite their climate convictions. What'd you learn?
Yeah, the big thing you hear is that a lot of people encourage clients to do so like a year and a half ago at the start of the pandemic when these shares cratered alongside oil prices. And it seems like so long ago, but it was only about a year and a half ago that oil prices actually turned negative in the U.S. and fell below zero for the first time ever. So a lot of people, that was a buying opportunity. And so a lot of people still feel comfortable with the sector. I mean, we've seen oil and natural gas prices just go in a straight line up in the past 6 months or so. And if that continues, it's really hard for investors to just sit on the sidelines because, again, climate is a factor, but it's not the main factor for a lot of them. Like, their job is to make money for their clients. And if you're missing out on the red hot sector, that can often be a tough dynamic.
So have you heard of investors regretting being outside of the oil and gas sector?
So a lot of investors who I talk to who aren't as optimistic on energy have kind of been okay with it and remain kind of, they have conviction in their long-term view, and they say that even with the short-term run-up, they're okay kind of missing out on that. But I think that's a lot easier to say when it's been like less than a year or whatever, or like a few months of maybe some slight underperformance there. But I think the longer it goes on, those who completely avoid the sector or have a lower exposure to it would be, again, put in a really hard bind, because your job is to, in a lot of cases, beat the market. And this is one of the only areas that's beating the market that puts you in a tricky position. So that will be really interesting to watch. Another thing is that energy is a so-called value sector. So energy stocks, bank stocks, these economically sensitive, cyclical things that tend to go up and down in general with the fortunes of the economy, that can be a force that lifts energy in some ways. And a lot of people think value and cyclical stocks are poised to outperform with the economy still kind of rebounding from COVID in a lot of ways. So that can also be a force that people are watching and could determine how people allocate to the group moving forward.
Amrit Ramkumar is a markets reporter for the Journal based in New York. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
And finally, the return to the office for the first time since March 2020. Outdated calendars, dead plants, maybe some dirty dishes. Tech reporter Katie Binley set out to learn about the horror stories of the Great Return and brings us the tale of a man in Toronto. You are warned.
As he walked towards his desk, he saw something sitting on it. At first, he thought it was a pine cone, in part because there was an old Christmas card that was still out on his desk. But as he got closer, he realized that it was not a pine cone. It was an apple that he had left on his desk back in March of 2020. And, on that day, he'd been told to pack up his things. So he was, carrying a bunch of bags full of stuff. And he actually remembered thinking like, ooh, I should really grab that apple. But he just didn't have a spare hand to grab it. And it just sat there. And it was very shriveled up and gross. And it had started leaking some kind of syrup. So it was in a puddle of syrup that he said smelled sweet. And one of his coworkers dared him to taste it, but he declined to do that.
That is the right decision. And you can read more stories about returning to the office at WSJ.com. And that's what's news for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Peter Granitz for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.